Hello! What's up, dear listeners? I'm your host, Hannah, and you're listening to This Is Not Fine. This Is Not Fine is your healthy dose of rage about culture, media, and society, only on CIDR 101.9 FM Vancouver, broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Hunkamedium-speaking Musqueam people. Today, I have a special and returning guest in the studio with me, Tasha.
Hi, I'm Hina's friend, Tasha.
My friend and my lovely coworker.
Yes.
Yeah, if you heard last week's episode, Tasha was on it. She was here with me in studio and we talked about parasocial relationships. Tasha is also the editor of Discorder magazine, which comes out of CIDR, and I'm really excited to have you on my show again.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to be back. I also just really like the idea of just being introduced as like, this is my friend, Tasha. But I appreciate the official introduction as well.
Yeah.
That does add more context. But I was just going to say, I'm here in the recesses of my mind.
I'm just an official person.
Yeah.
I am
Tasha. I'm a human sometimes.
Like, here's the thing. There are many layers to you, so I just want that to come across, and I want people to know.
That's very nice. That gives me a lot of room.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so today Tasha and I are talking about the... I can't say this with a straight face, but this is serious.
Yes, it is.
So, for folks who live on the internet like we do, if you remember in 2020, there was the Please Don't Perceive Me meme, which was everywhere. And today we're talking about that.
I'm also going to say, not to undermine what you said, but I remember this happening a lot in 2019, which is really funny because we all didn't know that COVID was about to happen.
No.
And so all of us were like loudly proclaiming like, do not perceive me, immediately followed by all of us being stuck in our homes, not being perceived,
yeah,
which is hilarious.
Actually. And it's like, actually, please perceive me.
Please do
I beg
perceive
you.
Me again.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, humans just cannot be happy. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just going back, talking a bit about the origin where it came about, and what's, like, how did it come about is what I'm saying. I don't know words. So
today on Know Your Meme / Hannah's show.
So the Please Don't Perceive Me meme has its roots in a 2013 New York Times essay titled I Know What You Think of Me. It's actually a really good read, and I encourage you to read it. I'm a bit of a history nerd, and I'm like, oh, did you know this is how this came about? So I just want to say that. I want to quote something, actually, from the piece. So the writer, he writes, "We believe that unconditional love means not seeing anything negative about someone, when it really means pretty much the opposite, loving someone despite their infuriating flaws and essential absurdity." I just love that essential absurdity bit.
That is so nice.
Right?
Yeah.
It's comforting.
Especially considering the article itself was written after this writer was CC'd in an email that he wasn't meant to be CC'd in. I'm not sure if you read it, but it's quite funny. The people that he worked with were, like, complaining about his love of his goats.
Yeah. Yeah.
So his response is writing this, like, incredibly beautiful piece. Mm-hmm. All because he was getting, you know, shit talked about him because of his goats.
For sure. Yeah, what happened was, it's actually a very funny story. He was sending photos of his goats to his coworkers. Yeah,
he's
real.
He's so sweet.
Right? And instead of hitting the forward button, someone hit reply all. And I think, I don't know exactly what the whole email was, but it started with oof. And that can be taken in so many different meanings, but the first thing that would come to me is like, oh, this person's annoyed by me. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And that led to this very poetic essay.
If only we could all be so poetic and artful when people are making fun of us.
True. Yeah, I know, right? And I also just want to highlight another thing which actually really translates to this meme. So at the end, and no spoilers, but I just want to read this one line from the essay, and it goes like, if we want the rewards of being loved, we have to submit to the mortifying ordeal of being known.
I actually wrote that down too, because that was one of my favorite parts.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad you said it, because I think that's probably the best and most grounded way to respond to criticism.
Absolutely. It's, yeah, it's that duality of men.
And, I mean, and it is mortifying, right? Like, it's mortifying to be alive and just be, like, a multifaceted person, especially considering I just was like, oh, I like that you introduced me as the editor of Discorder, but also, like, I'm just a human. Like, there's so many, like, different shades to being a person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mortifying, and that's kind of part of it.
Totally. You know what it reminds me of? This thing on Twitter where people often in a self-deprecating style go like, not to be earnest on Maine, but, and that disclaimer just is always, you know, hilarious to me, or being not to be vulnerable on Maine, but.
Yeah, that moment of like taking off a layer of skin and just being real on whatever platform.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as if we don't already do that in some way, but drawing more attention to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also noticed that when you were talking about the email chain in which this writer was caught up in, mm-hmm. the subject line being oof. And like, oof is just that net word that we use to describe something embarrassing generally, which is probably earnesty online.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, so what I was saying earlier is that the person who was shit-talking this goat person said oof, and as the writer inferred it as, oh, like, they're, if any, being snarky and or telling other people of like, oh, look how annoying this person's being, right? And so, yeah, it's interesting because you can interpret it in so many different ways, but I think it's mostly has a negative connotation, perhaps.
Yeah. And, like, I think this whole do not perceive me thing caught on, sort of separate from his sentiment about, like, the mortifying ordeal of being known. I think people latched on to, like, do not perceive me particularly, and we all started sort of, like, mimetically copying it for some time because we're so used to, like, the taxonomy of being online. It's like, here are my categories. I am this person. I speak in this voice, which maybe not all of you, but for me, it's like satire, you know, like that becomes your singular essence. Mm-hmm. And so the do not perceive me thing, it expresses like discomfort with the one way in which we're used to being perceived, because I think most people know that that's not, you're not just an Aries online, you know? Like,
what are you talking about?
Okay, actually, maybe some people are. But, like, I think that's sort of a communal discomfort we all suddenly reached with, like, the categories mm-hmm. that we're used to being in. And so it's interesting because it's being pitted as mortifying, but I also think it's kind of freeing, you know?
So liberating.
Yeah.
And the irony of it being a thing in 2020, which was peak pandemic, is really just, I don't know, nobody was being perceived. We were literally away from society, right? In our houses, or if you're on the bus, everyone's wearing a mask. And it literally, I did not recognize anybody. Nobody recognized me, right?
Yeah.
Versus you always see someone you know and you don't want to say hi to, and vice versa on 99 Beeline. And so it was, I don't know, a very obscure time.
Mm-hmm. It quickly became, please perceive me.
Yeah.
Like, you can have perception as a little treat.
No. Yeah, that person knows you enough to recognize you just by your eyes.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's a skill.
Yeah, totally. And of
one
course.
One that I did not develop.
No,
even
no.
with the full face, I'm like, I can't recognize anyone properly.
Yeah, no, totally. But also just, I don't know. I think of it as a cognitive dissonance of us really wishing for that, of like we're tired of being perceived and being seen and being categorized as this one person or this one characteristic. And people just identifying us by that. But then pandemic hits and we are not socializing and not meeting people and not really even, I mean, it was definitely very lonely for a lot of people. And then everyone was just very much perpetually online wanting to be perceived.
Oh my God, we collectively invoked not being perceived for the last couple of years by declaring this over and over again. In various contexts, we made it be, we all were not perceived.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also had another thought that is maybe contradictory to what I said earlier, but that's okay. My brain is soup. We're just going to go with it. Woohoo. I think that it's actually a response to how much labor it is to orchestrate perception online. Like, do you not think that it is like a certain amount of like, labor and time that you have to put into like really like laying out who you are on platforms mm-hmm. and like really the attention economy, like the petrol is personalities, like we keep giving it our personalities, and I think over the time that we've had it, we've all become like exhausted with trying to lay out who we are in all of our spaces mm-hmm. that we're just like, you know what, like don't perceive me, I don't want to do it anymore, I'm tired of like describing my personality to whatever like dating profile or like Instagram.
Yeah,
those are my examples. I only have two.
I mean, yeah, it's just it's not just you being contradictory, but the whole thing is contradictory, right? Because on one hand, we all know we're going to be perceived, and so we really want to try and control it. Mm-hmm. But then we get mad because we can't control it.
I feel like this is a therapy session for me. I'm like, yes.
You're welcome.
Thank you so
That'll
much.
That'll be exactly $100, please.
It was worth every second.
But really, I mean, do I have a bit of a persona online, I do. It does extend. It does extend from my personality, but it is also quite specific.
Yeah. What yeah, I think so. And like the more time you spend on a platform, the more years of your life that have like had all these like seasons of things and then like crashings of those seasons, like they don't make sense anymore because you can't as a person hold on to that one thing for so long. So you start crafting an identity, you manifest your aura, and then all of a sudden, you know, 3 or 4 years go by and you're doing something totally different and you kind of have to start like reworking it.
Mm-hmm.
And as a regular person out in the world in person time, like whatever, you kind of fall into it. But
yeah,
you know, in a series of photos or on a dating profile, you got to really keep up. You're like, I'm a snowboarder now, bro. Like,
yeah, bro.
Things have changed.
Sure. No, absolutely. And while you were talking, I was thinking, while being perceived, we all happen to be very articulate, and that's just not real because you can't be this articulate. See, I can't even say that word. You can't be
hard.
This articulate at all times, but when we're are creating that little persona of ours, it's perfect,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And so the beauty of this meme was that it's also pokes fun of, like, I am just a basic bro, please don't see me, / perceive
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I'm that person.
Yeah, sometimes you're like, I'm just out here trying to find some joy in my life.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to be, like, I was going to say I'm not trying to be professional. And I realized that, like, professionalization of everything kind of also feeds into this because
yeah,
there's also a certain point with your online presence where you're like, oh, gotta get professional, gotta get connected on LinkedIn. So you decide, you know, you throw out all those Facebook albums that you had for years.
Oh, yeah. Only me.
Yeah.
See, view two, only me. Oh, yeah. We've all done that.
Yeah.
It was cool until it wasn't.
Yeah. The photo albums that you know that you have on Facebook that are just like you in what's that photo app that came with all of the early MacBooks?
Oh yeah,
that everyone took photos of themselves with the mirror thing, like kissing themselves or like just different bad
That's
filters.
Awful.
Yeah, we all have them, and then you got rid of them because you're like, I gotta get a job.
Yeah.
So sometimes you're like, I wish to not be perceived because I don't want to be in gotta get a job mode.
Yeah.
I just want to be like a little teenage boy.
Tasha's pride and joy.
Yes, that was my summer aesthetic. We're throwing it out now. We're moving on.
It's fall.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking of my favorite meme, and I also want to point out to one thing that I mean, I'm more of a lurker online versus actively posting things. I still don't know how to do that, especially on Twitter. I don't know, I just get anxious. But there are people who take themselves very seriously, and then I look at them and I'm like, oh wow, you've all these followers and people like engage with your content, and you're this one person, this like go-to, I don't know, I write about culture.
Yeah.
And it also, the meme is satisfying because then it pokes fun on those people. And I'm like, yeah, like, that's kind of one. I mean, I'm sure they're multifaceted. I don't know. But it's kind of the singular identity which they really have carved and refined. And it's just too much. Like, everything they talk about is an inside joke about that. And I'm like, okay, we get it.
Yeah.
So the meme that I'm sure that I'm thinking about that people might have seen, but it's literally, it goes like, my pronouns are none. Please do not refer to me. Even better, do not perceive me. For practical purposes, I don't exist.
Oh, God, yes.
And it's funny to me on so many levels, but also here at CADR and Discorder, we're a very front-facing community organization, and we interact with volunteers, and it's great. And one of the things that we do here is if you are talking to someone, we would introduce ourselves, our name, and then our pronouns, and how it starts with my pronouns or not, I don't know. It just
yeah,
makes me chuckle.
it takes Do Not Perceive Me to its logical end. It's like taking that sentiment and just completely inflating it, being like, you know what, for all intents and purposes, I do not exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite meme around Please Don't Perceive Me?
I'm going to go with its inverse, which is Do Perceive Me. I think that I've spent a lot of time just lurking like you have online, that I have been very much Do Not Perceive Me just in ethos, not like in jest.
Yeah.
But I'm going to now decide to be perceived. I don't know as what, because it's hard for me to pin down something, but I will find a personality and I will be it on Twitter for like maybe a year. So perceive me is my new meme and also ethos.
I love that for you, Tasha. Also, look at you being so earnest without giving that disclaimer. Not to be earnest on Maine, but...
I know. Deep in my heart, I'm always earnest, but I'm going to pretend that's not real.
Yeah, I love that for you.
Thank you.
But yeah, no, I think... Yeah, like who... It's okay, not to get all philosophical about it.
See, disclaimers. We all got them.
See? Oh, you got me.
Yeah.
You got me. But I'm thinking, like, we all are, like, who is this for? Like, why do we feel the need to say it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to say that it's for me. I'm going to commodify my personality for me for the next year and see how it goes. Could be fun.
That's brave.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
No, I meant the disclaimer when we do that, right? Not to be Dash. I'm like, who is this for?
Not to be your mom, but I am your mom.
I'm your mom.
I mean, I just think that, like, most of the time, me online in a real way with my face and my job and whatever the heck else is kind of dysphoric. Like, it makes me feel extreme dysphoria. I don't know why, but I've always been way more comfortable with, like, a username and a display picture that aren't me, you know? Mm-hmm. And so any instance where I have to actually put any sort of real backing to it, I usually step away. I shy away from that pretty heavily.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is this my therapy session? I'm sorry.
Oh, I don't know. I'm just taking what you're putting down. But, let's going to what's the most important here today is our, this is an aside, but I'm just going to say it, our fall aesthetics.
Yes, that's true.
And how we want to be perceived.
Right.
Let's be real.
Yeah, there is a crossover. It's how we want to be perceived.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had this bit for a while, Hina and I, about like declaring our
seasonal
aesthetic. Yeah, and... every time a new season comes across, one has to make it very pointed to everyone in their lives what their aesthetic is for that season.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh. I called this a joke yesterday and Tasha was mad, and rightly so. I'm sorry.
It's very real.
Seasonal aesthetics are not a joke.
They're not a joke. You have to declare it. It's a manifesto. It's how this actually is. Yeah, this is very much like how you want to be perceived. Mm-hmm. And listen, it can be emotional. It can be like... it can be just an idea. It can actually be literally what you're wearing, but I like the metaphysical manifestation of this idea, which is just like, yeah, my summer aesthetic is like hanging on the ranch. What does that mean to you? I don't know.
Yeah.
It could mean overalls, but it could also just be like an ethos.
The mood. Yeah. It can be an archetype. It can be a concept.
Hina has already declared her fall 2022 aesthetic, and I think you should enlighten everyone.
Of course, yes. So this is radio and people can see me. My fall aesthetic is Mississauga Shore, my bro.
You are so brave.
Thank you. I also, since people can't see me, I'm wearing a hat that my friend Ian gifted me very kindly. It says halal. On it, I just think of a bro in Mississauga who loves shawarma, and
he's so full of joy.
It's like, so full of joy.
You know, he's just that guy that's like always happy, and like maybe he's just kind of like just left college because he realized that it wasn't for him.
No.
And like He loves what he does.
He dreams of opening a shawarma shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's be real. Yeah. Because he knows a thing or two. He can tell you where to get the best shawarma.
Like, honestly, when you came in today with the halal hat, though, I was like, she's living her aesthetic. Oh, yeah. My God. Oh, yeah. I'm so inspired.
Yeah. And we're not being subtle with our aesthetics.
No. I declared mine, too. I can't say it on radio, but I will say that my fall 2022 aesthetic is F you.
Yes.
It could just be F.
F you. With the finger and everything. Yeah. Tasha's flipping. Who's she flipping? We don't know.
Yeah. Who am I flipping off? Everyone? No one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it directed? No. It's not. Am I mad at society? Like, yes, but also it's not that.
No.
It's just F.
You. Yeah. So, for folks who may or may not have figured this out yet, is that fall aesthetics in general.
You have very little
seasonal
time.
Seasonal aesthetics is
September 21st.
Oh God, are about being very direct and about being very dramatic, and there's no subtlety to this.
No, there really is no room for subtlety.
No. No, no, no.
And once you declare it, you have to live it. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. You have to.
Yeah.
Okay, so on that note, I am going to take a short break, and I'm really excited to come back and talk more on Please Don't Perceive Me topic.
Or do.
Okay, so I'll throw us on some music.
The weapons trying to catch at the bad of me, but there's rippers and reflections saying give it all up. Skipping on the edges, am I living enough? We got self-fulfilling wishes, and I look into the mirror, tell the vision that you're the one who'll save me. Thank you.
the context of Vancouver's opioid crisis, CITR would like to take a moment to share some harm reduction strategies.
Try not to do drugs alone. When going out, let friends know what drugs you're taking and make sure someone has a naloxone kit. If you're able to, get your drugs tested before taking them.
Avoid mixing opioids with alcohol or stimulants. Remember that opioids can include painkillers prescribed by a doctor, and it's possible for any drugs to be contaminated with opioids.
Learn the signs of opioid overdose, which include, but are not limited to, unresponsiveness or unconsciousness, inability to speak, breathing that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, heartbeat that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, skin tone that has turned blue or gray, choking or gurgling sounds.
If you think someone is overdosing, call 911 immediately. Start rescue breathing and administer naloxone if you have it. You cannot get in trouble for being on drugs, so always call 911 in an emergency.
For more information about naloxone kits and training, visit towardtheheart.com.
Thank you and stay safe.
Tune in every Thursday from 11 p.m. till midnight for Copy and Paste with your host, Tim, a.k.a. Autonomy, the very best in underground dance music.
Hello, and welcome back. You're listening to This Is Not Fine on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I'm your host, Henna, and today I'm joined in studio by Tasha.
Hello,
Tasha.
Hello, hello.
What are we talking about?
We are talking about the Please Do Not Perceive Me meme. We are also declaring how we would like to be perceived by way of our fall 2022 aesthetics. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Yes. Also, something that I didn't mention in the previous segment is Tasha is the CEO of Seasonal Aesthetic. So for any
CEO,
and all...
CEO, creator, founder, boss babe.
Girl boss.
Girl boss.
Live, laugh, love.
Always.
Off Seasonal Aesthetics.
Yep. Languishing currently.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the best intro you've ever given me.
You're welcome. That is correct. So for this segment, I want to switch gears a little bit and get real and get deep.
Oh, man. Okay.
Something that I'm curious to talk to you about, Tasha, is what it means to be perceived / not perceived as people who create art. I know that's a lot to unpack.
My little art school heart just like broke open and then like sewed itself back together. I think when you create art, and I'm using that as like umbrella term, like music, visual art, whatever it is that you make, you do want it to be seen. But I use I say it because I feel like it's a part of you, but it's not you. Mm-hmm. And being an artist always sort of seemed to me like I was making things and I wanted those things to be perceived, but I didn't want to be perceived. Like, I had never fully wanted to be like the artist. I just wanted to have my art perceived. Mm-hmm. So I think people who make art want perception. They want things to be viewed and engaged with, but I don't know that everyone necessarily wants it to be about themselves, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. But you know, then it's like, it's this kind of weird situation where by the virtue of the art, or by just inherently, if the work is being perceived and if it moves you, if it causes you to have any kind of emotions, you'll automatically think of the creator, mm-hmm. the artist, right? And you don't know them. You're able to see and have a little glimpse into their lives through their artwork, and you do end up perceiving them in some way, right? Out of curiosity, out of whatever it may be. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, in the sense that if the art piece made you feel some things, you just think about the person behind it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
does that make sense?
It's this whole, like, the whole thing where you're like, can you separate the art from the artist?
Yeah.
And the answer is, like, resoundingly no.
No.
You know, like, you can't. there's always that person behind it.
And it's an I agree. It's not the artist completely, but it's an extension of a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's sort of like how when you're reading something, I find that writing is the closest thing you can get to what's actually happening in someone's head. Mm-hmm. As much as I'm a fan of all kinds of visual arts, like being a visual artist myself, like I get that this is kind of dumping on visual art in a way, but like the closest to actually getting to what's happening in someone's brain is reading their words. And so they are being so deeply perceived.
Mm-hmm.
Writing is all about perception and like explanation and elaboration. It's almost, yeah, it cannot be, the person cannot be extracted fully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for example, as some, yeah, for sure, it's quite different for writers and journalists. So as someone who writes, that's always a constant dilemma of really wanting to write personal essays, because nothing moves me like a personal essay. I can't, like, there's nothing I eat up more.
Oh God, same.
Than
yeah.
Memoir. And so just to say that I also enjoy writing them, but they're also painful. So just that dichotomy of wanting to do this because I feel strongly about something, but also not wanting to be perceived or not wanting to have that singular story attached to me is hard. I think about Haruki Murakami, the Japanese writer who is very recluse. He mostly writes fiction, and so it's quite different for fiction writers in the sense, like, you can get a sense of their vibe of like, oh, this person's eccentric, or this person's dark, or this person's funny, whatever. But with this person, he's very popular, widely read, and writes mostly in Japanese. And his books are translated into so many different languages. But why I bring him up is that he, few years ago, he released a book which was one of his first nonfiction books. It was a memoir, and it was called What I Talk About When I Talk About Running. And it was interesting when I went on Goodreads, and a lot of people had comments of like, it was so cool to get a glimpse of Murakami because he never really, like, he doesn't like to give interviews and is really shy. And so it was cool if, like, it wasn't so much about the book even, but, like, how people were maybe one step closer to getting to know him, in quotations, versus before with his fiction work. And so that just kind of stuck with me, if people were like, oh, like, it was cool to get to know him, as if he didn't really project what he really wanted people to think of him as, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, because I get it. I would read something or watch someone's documentary, I'm like, oh, like, I know this person's life story.
I mean, like, two things. One, what is the connection between writers and running? All of us have this obsession with running, or have had, and it's crazy. Mm-hmm. But that's an aside. Number two, it depends what voice you're writing in, right? Like, I presume that, like, his self, his personality, his whatever, his essence would come out in, even if it was fiction. Like,
yeah,
there are often times where you can't separate the person from their fiction either.
No,
it's just a different voice. And like, even if your voice sort of is this like sci-fi kind of high-minded, mm-hmm.
Just more behind the scenes
tale. Yeah, it's like, it's there, it's like, it's ruminating in the background,
like puppetry.
Yeah, exactly. It'll pop up. And then, you know, if someone writes in the voice of just like the I in a personal essay, like, that's very clear.
Very close. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's as close as you can get to someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely. Yeah. Just going back to that, I thought that was really interesting. And in terms of being perceived / not being perceived as someone who writes and as a writer, is that one part of me really believes that the purpose of art is to be consumed. And if it's not being consumed and perceived, then perhaps it's a missed opportunity. Because at the end of the day, we're always creating art for someone, for an audience. And yes, it is for us, but it's also not just for us.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like a very spiritual approach to it. But I agree with you. I feel like when you're making stuff and you're putting it out into the world, or you're just making stuff in general, it's like you're building these little bridges, and you do want someone somewhere to cross over, right? Like, mm-hmm. you may not want it to be for a general audience. It may just be for you, but it's in a way you're like reaching out, and there, like,
it's
art,
outreach.
If anything, is just outreach. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just small little versions of that. Like, sure, you want to make something cool, but you also want someone to be like, yeah, that is cool. Mm-hmm. And everyone that has found something really weird in the ether, like, has gone, like, digging in a record collection and found something, like, really wild that really resonated with you, gets that, because you were on the other side of the bridge and you, like, crossed over and you saw someone's weird little thing and you're like, that's so sick. Like, that reaction is, like, that's the crossover on the bridge. Oh, my God, metaphors are the best way to describe
it. I love this little, yeah, I was just thinking, I'm like, I love this little crossover bridge analogy.
It's like the only way I can talk about things.
I'm literally,
like, it has to be metaphor.
I'm literally imagining those stick figure cartoons in this, like, little bridge. And,
same.
Like a pencil sketch.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I see it.
It's fully animated.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All the best things are.
Like, I don't want anyone to cross my bridges, but I do.
Yeah. It's just that, it's that sentiment, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, why do people write fanfic if they don't want other people to, like, learn about the same, like, ship the same ships? You know what I'm saying? Like, you're building bridges, dog. I know you're doing it.
Wow. Fanfiction is a wild west. Yeah.
It's...
Right? By proxy of writing fan fiction, I imagine it's for other fans who are fans of the same fiction.
Yeah, never looked at something in the way in which that person is looking at it. They never thought that that character was particularly sexy, but now they do.
Yeah.
And now these two random disparate people have, like, reached a connection about what they think is sexy.
Yeah. It's for a group. Fan fiction is for the community, if I may.
Fan fiction, more like fan connection.
Tasha, you're such a dork.
You shouldn't have let me go on.
But no, for real. And it's so funny that you your example was, like, if a character is sexy or not, because I was thinking recently a friend of mine was reading Twilight fan fiction, which was very erotic.
Listen, we all did things in the middle of the pandemic that were, like, regressing toward our youth, so
yeah.
I understand and admire it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have been talking about the Harry Potter fan fiction. I don't remember what it's called. It's got some kind of, like, cool cultural reference name. Sorry, forgot it, but...
what was it about?
It's like, some sort of Harry Potter fan fiction about, like, Harry Potter's parents.
Oh.
But it resurfaced after years of being buried, because a lot of people on Tumblr were like, oh, remember how we all used to, like, relate to each other about this particular fanfic? And then over the last 2 years, they just got back
resurfaced.
Into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, just, I suppose, going back to making art, I'm curious about your approach. Do you ever think of an audience in mind?
I had been asked that question all throughout my arts degree. Mm-hmm. Like, no. I don't know. I think I do.
Okay.
But mostly in my gut, no. But I do make efforts, sort of, like, all the time without really thinking about it, to reach out to the world with things that I've made. So, like, I know that I have it in me that I want to show people stuff that I'm working on. And I'm probably thinking about some kind of audience, if not just the, like, one person who's like, yo, I really got that reference in that one piece. Like, that was awesome. One time at my grad show a million years ago, I had a little clip in one of my collages, because I do large-scale collage work, whatever, from Skyrim, which is a video game. And it was, like, hidden in the basement of the school at the time. And like these two kids that were like 12, and obviously we're here to see like their sister or something that didn't care about art, walked by, they were like, yo, that's from Skyrim. And that was my moment. I was like, I connected with someone.
That was
someone.
Your peak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think yes. The answer is yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do want to be perceived in a way. I just don't know how.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That can be frustrating. But I feel the same way. I mean, I don't want to be like there's only one right answer, but there is always an audience, even if you're not thinking about it consciously. I mean, a lot of times it's just subconscious. But it's always for someone.
Do you have an audience in mind when you're writing?
Did not want the tables to be turned.
She really didn't.
I just like to ask questions.
She really didn't.
And do not ask me. That's my like. don't perceive me. Don't ask me questions. I'm joking. Yeah, for sure. I'm thinking. It changes and shapeshifts a lot, but a lot of times for personal essays, the word resonance always stays with me. Of like, I want people to resonate with this piece, and it's a lot like people with shared identities as me, or something that I would have liked to read but did not come across.
Yeah.
So that's a big one.
Resonance. That's so nice. That's such a good way to put it.
Yeah. Like you know when you read a piece of work and it just resonates in your body and you like feel it in every inch of your soul and you're like, oh, like I really get it.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what that would be my dream to like try and deliver that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's sort of, it's wanting to be perceived, but in a kind of unknown way. You just want it to strike where it's meant to strike.
Yeah.
Sometimes you read something. I have this experience with poetry a lot where I just, someone writes a line that I just hadn't thought of in that way before, or I had always felt that emotion, but I'd never been able to put it into words.
Mm-hmm.
And so having someone put something into words that you instinctively feel is like such a magical thing.
Yeah, that's it. Like,
yeah.
Just someone feeling what you're feeling by reading it on paper and just kind of that like experience of that.
Yeah. It's particularly... It's particularly resonant in poetry, I think, just because there's where a lot of experimentation happens. So sometimes people write things that are just like a whim, but mm-hmm. you never know if that whim is something that like all day I have been feeling kind of anxiety, but I don't know where to put it. And then I read someone's whim. I'm like, that's it. That's the anxiety that I did not know how to talk about.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's an absurd feeling because a part of me is like, oh, my God. They did it so well. I wish I could do this.
Yeah.
So there's always that. I mean, if you're an artist. But then a part of you is also like, oh, I feel really seen. And this is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Feeling seen is the opposite mimetic internet phrase to do not perceive me.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. Okay. Well, I am just going to take another short break and we'll be right back.
British folk rock band Bear's Den will be performing live in Vancouver with special guest Izzy Heltai at the Vogue Theatre on October 1st. Their album Blue Hours pairs the duo's intricate songwriting with a spacious sonic palette inspired by 80s soft rock and big pop songs. To see Bear's Den at the Vogue Theatre on October 1st, get tickets at admitone.com.
This is the first one. I think it played in order, so this is my last one.
Do you love being caffeinated? And do you hate that greedy, soulless international conglomerates are succeeding in the cutthroat world of coffee? Sounds like local coffee roasters Trek Coffee is for you. Trek Coffee is 100% indigenous and military veteran owned and operated.
This music is so good.
Thriving. Stop by Sunshine Convenience on 4th, the Super Value on Commercial, or Grocery Checkout in the Nest to pick up some Trek Coffee today.
Welcome back to This Is Not Fine. You're listening to the show only on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. This is the last segment of today's show. I'm your host, Henna, and in studio life with me, I have Tasha. We've been talking about the Please Don't Perceive Me internet discourse and what it means to us as people who create art. This has been very enlightening.
This has been. I feel like the entire time we actually were talking about wanting to be perceived in various ways while hiding under the cloak of do not perceive me, which is a hilarious place to be.
Yeah.
But maybe that's what's under the do not perceive me meme in the first place. It's just like a sad little like cry to be perceived.
That's really sad.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think of like my high school emo phase of like nobody gets me.
Oh, girl.
But also, please get me. Let's be real.
Yeah, we all had bangs that covered our eyes, so someone could push them back and be like, "You have beautiful eyes,"
and that would make me cry.
Yeah,
I cut my own bangs on my 17th birthday, and I do not recommend that. It was.
I recommend it. If you're 17 and your birthday's coming up, yo, cut your bangs.
It was hideous.
It's going to be great. But it wasn't.
Oh, they were crooked, obviously, because I used, like, blunt scissors and did it in my bathroom. Yeah, anyway, let's not go down there.
Well, lucky for you, you probably didn't have an Instagram page, so you didn't have to actually document anything.
I wasn't an influencer.
Yeah.
Back then. that makes me think of how, well, yes, I was on the internet in high school, but I also had a dial-up connection. It was really slow, and it was easier to bury things back then. But now, you just, how do you, everything's just there, and it feels permanent.
Yeah, I think you really nailed it by saying it was easy to bury things.
Yeah.
You could just kind of live through phases and have it not make any impact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least someone take a photo of you at a party and post it on an album on Facebook and tag you.
But and then you hide that.
You hide it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember when we started getting on Facebook and having accounts, it was like, oh, you have to make sure it's a private account and there are a lot of creeps out there. And there was a lot of focus on that. But now everything's just so front-facing and so public and so out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it's a weird time to be alive.
Yeah, I just feel like, I think we're all exhausted emotionally, physically, but mostly we're exhausted with like the digital immaterial idea of perception and having to constantly feed that into like platform media.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think a lot of us are collectively like, we're done with it. Like, why do people have Finstas? Like, You're done, dude. Like, you're over doing your fall 2022 aesthetic, even though it's really important and you should continue.
It's crucial to existence.
But like, but we're feeling like this anxiety and exhaustion with having to keep up how we want to be perceived, and I think we just want to stop.
Yeah, and or sometimes I'm like, I don't care how I'm being perceived.
Yeah,
you know. I mean, yes, I care, but sometimes I'm like, I don't want to.
Yeah.
And that brings me to what we're going to talk about for our final segment.
Ooh.
What are some of our key takeaways from today's discussion? If you have any words of wisdom for us today, Tasha.
Words of wisdom. Oh, boy.
Just words.
Don't submit to the attention economy. I don't know, actually. I don't know, because I think playing with it is really fun. I think maybe my words of wisdom are, if you find a way that brings you joy and makes you laugh about engaging with your social medias, then continue to do that. Mm-hmm. If you feel like you're constantly like putting in the time, it's like laborious, then yo, stop that. You know, because it's not worth it. It just keeps the people that run those platforms happy. So, like, why bother? I don't know. That's like super like fuck capitalism.
Yeah. Here's the thing. No, I get it. I think. It's also just, I'd say, lean into the silliness and amuse yourself. And sometimes maybe your friend doesn't get your joke, but you're still funny.
That's true.
You know? And if you're amused, then that's what matters.
Yeah. Submit to the mortifying ordeal of being known.
Ooh. Submit to it, for sure.
Submit to it.
Because surrender, my friend. Because... If people are perceiving me anyway, I want to make sure that I nail the point home that I am Mississauga Shawarma Bro. That's how I'm going to be perceived. And I'm going to be loud about it. And Hasha is going to be F you. That's their aesthetic. And
I claimed it today. Today I claimed it. So now I have to fulfill my destiny. I don't really have a choice at this point. But. No.
But hey, only if you want to. Some days you can take off.
Hey, yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right. I can take some days off.
Yeah.
And winter will come eventually, and I will have to declare winter aesthetic.
That's the beauty of it. It's fleeting, just like life.
Aesthetics are fleeting.
Just like life.
Yeah.
That's kind of dark, but it's also liberating.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's liberating to be able to break open and be many different things at once. Absolutely. So, like, that's my favorite.
Totally. Because it's like by the time you're tired, it's winter, baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time you're tired, it's spring.
Yeah.
Okay. Keeps your life spicy, lets you lean into one thing and be obnoxious, but in a sweet way, obviously. Like, don't be a jerk. And it just adds some joy in your life, which, I don't know, life can be sad and dull.
Yeah. Listen, there are so many categories that you can, like, take up to fulfill your identity, but seldom do you get to just choose from the wide world of vibes for your aesthetic. So have at it, my guy. Just choose something.
I love it. Choose your own adventure.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Because life is fleeting and winter is soon. So choose a fall aesthetic now. You don't have time.
I love that so much. Tasha has really sold this to me, as you can see. I mean, you can see, but you can hear. I drank the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, and you look great today.
Thank you so much. So do you.
Thank you. I will really come into FU this fall, but yeah. Right now I'm workshopping it, guys. Mm-hmm. I'm workshopping it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this does bring us to the end of this episode. This has been so fun. Thank you again, Tasha, for blessing me with your presence.
I'm happy to be invited.
So I'm just going to throw another song on and say goodbye. Until next time, take care.
Leave it to the eagle, then it's tactic. You ain't who you claim to be, then you a catfish. Tell them all, get off my case, get off my basket. I would let you in my heart, but you with that shit. That's a no, no, no for you, been capping. You ain't call on me. How the hell I fell for you, but you ain't fall on me. That's why. But you ain't call on me.
That's why.
Baby, I'm a loner. Even when I don't. Like, Cuddy, I'm a stoner. I've been trying to put my smoking at ease.
kinda nice alone. Although it ain't always nice alone. I think I'm gonna be alone.
Okay, sadly, I'ma probably dip out while you napping. Promise I won't tell the world what happened. That's for the memories we recorded in our brain. She gave me brain, that's mental DVDs. Captions. Only see explicit for the captions. Pornography and me, that's such a bad mix. She a freak, she said, Big Terry, won't you long for me? Well, sexually I do, but still, baby, I'm a loner. Even when I don't wanna be. Like, honey, I'm a stoner. I've been trying to put my smoke in at ease, but I can't. Baby, I'm a loner. Even when I don't wanna be. It's kinda nice alone. Although it ain't always nice alone. I think I'm gonna be a loner. Baby, I'm a loner. I think I'm gonna be alone.